Hi.
Sarah?
Hi, good morning.
Good morning. Have you had your tea?
I'm a little slow today. I actually thought we were at 10:30, so I'm sort of 30 minutes behind in my caffeine. And then
shall
I call
you back?
Calendar. Nah, it's okay. I've got it here with me. It's a slow day.
Happy to call you back. I can't imagine why you're exhausted.
I also came home to no plumbing. So the first week, everything was out in the house. It was just unbelievable.
Oh,
but it's working now. Everything's
good.
Good. Yeah.
I looked back to when we had our last conversation.
A year ago?
And I knew it had been a while. It was a little over a year ago. It was on June 12th, 2020.
Oh, wow. So much has happened.
I know, and I think about all that has occurred in your career in this year that's gone by, and it's a lot to talk about.
Yeah, I meant the world. I can't believe all that happened in that year. Oh, my God. Anyway, how are you doing?
I'm doing okay. Kind of tired of all of the hunkering down and ready to get out and about, but, you know, I'm older, and now my daughter, who is with me, and her husband is pregnant, and so we've got to be very cautious. And this Delta strain is rearing its ugly head. So,
yeah, I've heard of like 10 vaccinated people that have gotten it.
Yeah. So I need to be, and she's high risk pregnancy, so I have to be.
Yeah.
I was going to head to the Armory in September, but I canceled because I think it'll
That's
probably
smart.
Reach its peak. In the, so I'm kind of sad about that, but it is what it is, and you do what you need to do to protect each other.
Yeah, there will be more Armories.
Right, exactly. Actually, last night for my bedtime reading, instead of reading, I listened to our first conversation again.
Oh, wow.
And realized that, you know, it was really rich. And so what I'd like to propose is that I post two postings, part one and part two of our conversations, posting the original one and then posting today's as well. Because I think together they'll be pretty dynamic. I mean, the first one, we were just, you know, beginning to understand what was happening to our lives with the pandemic. And then in light of that, all that you've achieved in a year makes for a compelling story. So with your approval, I'd like to post both of them.
Sure. I can't really remember the first one, but if you think it's compelling, you can go for it.
Well, we talked about a lot of things, and you're very articulate. And so I think it's important that we post too. And you'll be getting the audios of those as well.
Okay.
We talked about the music book, which will forever haunt me, as you know.
I wish I had sent you. I only have five, but I wish I had sent you one before.
I ordered one, actually.
Oh, good. Oh, good.
So I'll be getting it. But it takes me back to when we first met, however many years ago that was. And that had to be, well, I don't know. You're not in that same studio anymore, are you?
No, I was trying to think. So I think
I remember the studio very well, but
2010, 2011.
Yeah.
So can't remember when Brian closed. I think he still had his gallery, but
yeah, he still had his gallery. So, but I remember that, and I remember, you know, feeling so taken by the music book, which you had actually had done quite a few drawings in it. So I'm wondering how now it's come to be a facsimile, because I think a couple galleries had it in their archives, because I looked at it one more time.
Yeah, it had it was in the Made in L.A. the first time.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know what? You probably saw that right before then in the studio. So
well, actually, because I was very interested in purchasing it, but you had made a commitment to putting it in some exhibition, and I think there was some talk at that time about interest in that book.
So I backed
off, because, you know, if a museum wants it, then I would respect that. And so it's forever been on my mind, I mean, for a lot of reasons, but so now the idea of having a facsimile of it is relieves me a bit.
Yeah, I'm curious what you're gonna think, because you out of anyone I know, you really get into the actual paper. Like, you feel the vibes of the paper more than most
right.
collectors. So I think I worked with Connie Portillo, who's a great designer, and his wife is Chanel Porter, who did all those great crafts. I mean, it's art, but craft adjacent shows with weaving and ceramics. So they, like, you know, I feel like the household understands things in a way that I don't know if other designers would have been able to translate it as well, because the book is so special as an object. And Connie did a great job keeping the spirit of it. So I'll be curious what you think. We actually just did direct photographs. So you get all the, like, weird handwritten notes and stains on the paper. And yeah, it's pretty beautiful.
Well,
the only difference is it's not as thick. We didn't put every single empty page
I see.
In it.
Mm-hmm. How many drawings are in it?
I think 30.
I mean, because you continued to work on it over the years, I believe.
Yeah, I think there's 30. I'm supposed to. I don't know. Like, sometimes I just don't count it right.
And how many are you?
30.
How many did you publish of the book?
All of it.
No. I mean, how many?
Oh. Sorry.
How many are in the publication?
A thousand.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, I'm very excited to get it.
Good. Yeah,
it's gonna
I'm
be...
excited to have it out.
Was it the Tang that prompted the publication?
Yeah, Ian Berry wanted to do it. And then I wanted to link up with X Artist Books in Los Angeles, and that was a really great coming together of Alexandra Grant. Has this press with her partner Keanu Reeves, and they are in LA, so it was really great to have people in LA, so we'll be able to do, and they do book fairs and stuff, we'll be able to get it out, and it's nice to bring a different community. And Alexandra and I used to show together at Honors back around the original time of this music book, so it's nice. There's a lot of good people involved, and it's a pretty fast, simple project so far.
Great. Well, I'm looking forward to it. So when we talked back in June of 2020, you were at that time preparing for a show at Valmeter in the following September.
Oh, yeah.
And you had mentioned that you were playing around with some collages as well as some of the paintings. And I remember, and I'm sad that I wasn't able to see that exhibition in person, but I remember seeing images of the work, and especially in the paintings, I saw something new, something different. And I wanted to hear your thoughts on that exhibition, that show, and those paintings.
Well, like most artists, I lost some shows to sinkholes. I feel like it was the worst time to have my first show. We had... you know, so much going on in Los Angeles. I think we were under curfew. Suzanne was under a voluntary evacuation because of the fires at her house. So, yeah, I mean, it was one of the peak times. I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like a blip in my brain. I would never want to do a show in a pandemic again, and most artists would probably say the same because a lot of people didn't get to see it. And but the work was great and strong, and it continues to find exciting placement and homes. So, you know, it wasn't a total loss, but it was very unusual. And it's hard as an artist to, like, think about the work and then think about the timing of a show and all those other things that can happen, and, like, how not to conflate the emotions of it. But the work itself did do a lot of new things. I had been... and I still am making a lot of stained glass, but I actively was trying to make more organic paintings that, after making so many stained glass works, I started painting paintings that looked like stained glass. And before I made the stained glass, a lot of the work on paper looked like stained glass. So it wasn't foreign, but I really wanted to be looser. I don't know. The show was called The Possibility of Overcoming Negative Thought. And it just felt like, sort of a survival push in the paintings.
Go ahead.
That was, I think that's, really the only show I opened in, well, I also did the show at the Momentary with Lauren Haynes, and that was during the pandemic, but it's very odd to watch how Arkansas deals with the pandemic in LA. Every place, it's been fascinating to see the shows in all the different places and how the year panned out and affected schedules or didn't, or affected crowds. Like, people went to the Momentary to see that show. People did not really come out to LA, and when they came out, they had to make an appointment. There could only be one person in at a time. It was like this oppressive way of viewing art, but it was an oppressive time to be alive. So, yeah, I don't know. I kind of don't want to think about that show.
Well,
it sort of bumps
me
out.
I understand where you're coming from, and I understand the mindset and the space you were in emotionally. But at the same time, what I think all of these exhibitions, whether it was at Valmette or the Momentary or most recently at the National Gallery, which had been postponed for months and months and months, there was something significant in all of those that brought great energy and joy to the viewer, even over the internet.
Yeah.
And I thought it would be fun to explore each individual moment and how they differed. And you kind of touched upon that here with difference between Arkansas and California. But if we start with Suzanne's show, which obviously is a gallery and the paintings are hung, and it was a different kind of exhibition, I mean, those works were just glorious, and I felt something different from them than I've felt in previous painting exhibitions. And I want to use the word refinement, and I don't know that that's the correct word, but I felt in them a certain, there was something different coming from your hand. And maybe it has to do with the stained glass. I mean,
it probably comes from my personal life. I mean, the possibility of overcoming negative thought. My work is pretty much a direct translation of what I'm going through, what the world's going through, and how to make sense of it all. And that title was something that someone had mailed to me when I was a teenager on the back of an envelope. And I think, I've been holding this envelope for years. But I was 2019, before the pandemic, was a pretty disastrous year for my personal life and just, you know, going through shit with an asshole and getting myself out of it. And so a lot of the paintings were about, like, the self-portrait in it is about breaking away from the stained glass and getting this organic wavy thing going, but also really about refining my strength, refining, like, you know, we're all affected by the people around us. And if you have a negative situation that's like bringing you down, when you finally break out of it, it's really hard to break out, but you're so much better off on the other end. So a lot of that work in there was really me processing through that. But by the time I got to show it, it felt like the whole world was in a depressing spot when I had finally broken through to the like joy of finding my freedom and self and strength, like full on without any compromises again. And I think you can feel that in the work.
Well, what you just described is what I was feeling. I was feeling this, I said refinement, and you know, I did see that, and I don't know, it was so glorious. I mean, they sang, these paintings absolutely sang. And they were so unified in that, like a chorus. It was they were absolutely spectacular, and it makes me think also. I'm going to backstep here a minute. I think the dollar bill pieces that you've become known for, or the mm-hmm. bill, you know, the dollar pieces,
yeah.
they have always reminded me of stained glass. So the transition from them into the stained glass, and then the stained glass back into the paintings, I think is a great demonstration of how, in the studio, artists practices as they vary, all feed off of one another.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it probably becomes a very subconscious kind of thing. It just automatic. You feel it and it moves. And so I think that's all very fascinating.
Yeah, it surprises me all the time. We're working on it. The Tang is also making a monograph that's going to, well, I don't know if I'm allowed. It has a great distribution, but I don't know if that's public. But but going through, it's like the Tang paintings, but it's also the National Gallery show, and it's some best of paintings and the SFO glass work. And it's so fascinating and to look back to like the Cam Raleigh show I did in 2015 where I painted on the windows, or even earlier in that, I did some windows in Zurich in like 2007 or 8. And you just, if there's this moment that clicks and you're like, it all makes sense. You're not.
Yeah. All that stuff in the beginning that you thought was, you know, toss it aside really had significance and had meaning to where you are today. I find that in artist journals when I go back or with them when we review some of the journals, we'll find things in those journals from years ago that are pertinent to the moment. You know, you carry that with you. So, you know, kudos. I think the Valmetter show was really a breakthrough moment for me in watching your work.
Thanks. That's great to hear. It's odd. Like, it sort of made me realize, even though, like, it was a great show and I don't know, but I'm used to this level of, like, an opening, even though I'm not that social, but with the Tang, we did a big opening and people flew in and you just, I don't know, there's something connected in the brain with actually celebrating. Like, I mean, not at all to compare, but I think about people who lost family members and couldn't have memorials this year. Like, there's certain traditions that we do that help us process. And I think opening a big art show in the pandemic, you just like, it's like someone deflated your tires. You worked so hard and then you just had to like, but it's nice to hear that people saw it digitally and the paintings carried over the screen.
They certainly did. I can only imagine the power and the movement you would feel with it being in their presence. The other thing I was curious about before we go on to some of the other exhibitions is I know that you have a sensitivity to noise. Mm-hmm. So there are two things about that I wanted to explore with you. Is one, I think of the pandemic, I think of quiet. You know, our minds were more quieted, our bodies were more quieted. And then I think of how your goal, I think, from the beginning with your artistry was to make noise. I found a quote. What did you say? Something about you wanted them to be as loud as you could make them or something like that. If I can find
I think that was when I moved to Los Angeles. Because there's moments that have been very quiet, but that's more of a, like, standing your ground, visibility, especially as a woman.
I see.
But also, the pandemic was so quiet, but like, my friends that lived in New York, like, the sirens weren't ever as bad in LA that they were in New York, but they were pretty bad. And I, like, now here, when you hear a siren, it's a whole different, like, tenseness that gets in your body.
Right. Because it's not so abstract.
Yeah.
The possibility.
In a couple weeks where they said in LA, if you get in a car accident, we will not take you to the hospital. Like, there are no beds. And, like, you know, that... it's just tough to comprehend the stress, but I thought I was handling it really well, and I think I did handle it well, but I'm also now realizing, like, oh my God, that was so stressful, and it still is. Lately.
Well, you were containing the stress because you had a job to do.
And also because I'm lucky and privileged. Like, I have a yard, I can garden, I have cats I rescue, and they're therapeutic. I think about what if I had been 20 years earlier where I was like, you know, living wherever I could find for cheap money, like I would have been wrecked. I don't know. It's just affected people so unevenly, and the inequalities were so dramatized this year.
For sure. The other aspect of noise versus your work, the sensitivity to noise, is it seems to me to be a dichotomy, because when I think of your paintings, they're loud. And, you know, at times you might even use the word noise to describe them.
Mm-hmm.
And so that play of the two has me curious. And I'll tell you where I'm coming from. I notice when I'm driving in my car, because I have, you know, my visual acuity is probably my greatest sense. And when I'm driving in my car, I'm so aware visually of everything around me, I can't listen to books on tape.
Yeah,
because they become noise to my enjoying the rhythms of the scenery.
Yeah, I'm the same way.
I can listen to music because there's rhythm, you know, but and I can find music to kind of complement what I'm visually taking in. And so I wonder about that for you.
Well, I always feel kind of goofy telling people this, but anyone who dates me, I would love if they read this book. And I basically end up explaining to partner after partner what HSP is, a highly sensitive person. And there's a therapist in Mill Valley, California, who wrote a whole book on it, that when I read that book, it really changed my life, because it was everything that people find annoying about me that I struggle with. And it deals with noises, or like spaces where you sit in a restaurant, how you can't, like, I cannot listen to books on tape or podcasts. Like, I can't do anything. I can't focus on a painting unless it's music that I already know, or new music that, like, I'm really into. But it was interesting that to figure out that the therapist who wrote that book lived in Mill Valley, because there was a pivotal year in my life in grad school where this amazing painter, and Catherine Van Dyke, lived up there. And I needed a house fast, and she took me in and let me live in her guest house. And it's really the only time in my life I felt really safe and able to just go out the door and walk and feel totally fine. And Mill Valley is like one of the richest places in America. It is amazing. It's like living in, I mean, it's not quite like living in a rainforest, but it has a similar vibe. But it was curious to see that the woman who wrote this book on this thing that I definitely have, that's where she chose to live. And it's the only place that I totally felt okay. But I would guess you probably have that too, because noise is a huge thing, and ability to focus. It's sort of like OCD, except it's to sensitivities. Like you have to like sit in a way where you can see the door, or you can't be in large crowds or rooms that are too loud, and on and on and on. And a lot of the times, you know, I think that definitely is in my work, and my work comes out as being very loud. However, there's always like interesting, weird nuances and details that pay off for extended looking, or like there is a quiet side in the loudness with the work.
Well, I think the loudness brings you to the work. Mm-hmm. And then once you get into the rhythms of each painting, then that becomes mesmerizing and almost therapeutic in itself. It's a process.
Yes.
That's what,
yes,
I find happens for me in the work.
Yeah.
So this is what you refer to as a painting mind, because that's a phrase I read about somewhere, where you have a painting mind and you can't be distracted. And you talk about when you're pulled away from those, you know, focused moments, it can't be the same when you go back. It's modified somehow. And
yeah.
I understand that very much, being in that process.
It's like a meditation.
Yeah, yeah. Very cool. So then you had, I'm not sure if I'm taking these in order, after the Valmetter show, when did the Momentary show open?
I think it opened in February. Yeah, it did, right? The week of Valentine's Day. And then it closed at the end of May. And sadly, I never got to go out there, which is the first time I've ever done a show I was really proud and happy about. And I don't think I was fully vaccinated, and then they lifted the masks there really early. I just didn't want to deal. But it was a great show. It was cool too, because that was the first, speaking of distractions, my God, all the cats just ran inside and begged for catnip. I have to walk to the other side of the studio. The Momentary is a new museum of Crystal Bridges. So I went out, and I had gone out
when they first got the building and it was a full-on construction site, and I toured it then, and that was cool, but, you know, not, it changed a lot since I got there. And then I went out for the opening of it and got to go to an opening, and that was the last time I traveled before the pandemic.
And when was that?
I think it was it was like January or February 2020.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and then we weren't delayed that much. I honestly, my brain can't remember too much right now, but
so you got to feel the space.
Oh yeah, and twice.
Okay.
So
okay.
I really knew what I was getting into. However, it was supposed to be all on site, and there was no way I could go to Arkansas in the pandemic and paint for 2 weeks. That just wasn't going to happen. So I modified it, which sounds so silly, but it was the first time I had ever planned a show out completely. Like we placed the work before I even got there. And I think we did tweak a couple things from the original plan, but basically it was all planned from afar. And that's how most people do most of their work. And I never knew if I was capable of it. So that was great. And it was really a pleasure working with everybody at that museum. And you had asked about the collages. I was making a lot of these collages. And I just, there's something I go back to when I have time, and I haven't really had time. So there was one collage in the Beale Meadows that then went to the Momentary. And I haven't made any sense. I'm currently, I got this great color copier in the studio in the pandemic, but I'm having some very basic dumb technical thing where I changed my Wi-Fi and I can't figure out how to reconnect it. And I wrote them yesterday, like, but I really don't have the time. The collages come in when I don't have deadlines. Mm-hmm. And it will be really exciting. Like, I would love to do a book, a collage book. Like that would be a amazing personal weird diary thing. On one day. Yeah.
So the Momentary, all the work you created for the Momentary, either it was done site-specific or
it was not.
Shipped.
It was all shipped.
It was all shipped,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah, I made a, that was, it was supposed to be site-specific, but then because I couldn't be there, it wasn't. But I did create a new floor piece for them with seating areas.
Right.
And that, you know, I thought about like, okay, how do we get seats that are 6 or more feet away, and I placed the work so that people could flow through the space without crowding. And there was the very first walkthrough I did, there was this strange door high above. There probably was a platform that had been knocked out. It used to be a craft macaroni factory or something before the Momentary. So originally the architects were going to cover up that door, but I asked them to keep it open so that I could drop in a stained glass. And that was amazing. I had made this stained glass in London, and then when I just turned it on its side, it fit perfectly into the door.
Was this a piece you'd made some time ago?
I made it in 2018. It was actually the first. I made it right when the SFO, so it was one of the first ones I ever made.
Okay.
Like, there were site-specific, like, details where I knew the architecture, and I made the new floor piece to work in between two beams, and the architects were great, and they worked with me and they turned it into a window instead of breaking it out. There were elements that were made for the space. However, it wasn't me in there painting the way, like, the floor on the painting is full on. I sent you images of that, too, today. I don't know if you saw.
Yeah, I did, for sure. So it was a whole new experience for you having to execute virtually.
Yeah, it was huge. Like, I mean, it's sort of silly because it's just the reverse of how most artists work. And it was a great basic learning skill to pick up because, you know, if I can't travel or, you know, as I age, I'll be able to do this. And
But it had to have taken an exceptional crew that you were working with, too.
Yeah, I was just going to say, Lauren's amazing, Caitlin's amazing, Taylor, like, everyone I worked with was great. And so easy, too. Like, actually one of the best teams with communication that I've ever worked with. We would do Zoom meetings, and
I love clear communication. I love prompt responses. And to work with a curatorial team who, you know, does that, and they're all very young, too. They're like the new force in the art world, which is exciting.
Well, there are exciting things going on in that place, period. You know,
yeah.
It's impressive what's happening there.
Yeah.
So then we move on. Oh, I wanted to ask you about architecture because, you know, you're having these monumental architectural experiences, starting with the train station and then the Momentary, and then we go on to the National Gallery. And it seems that architecture is playing a bigger and bigger role in your artistry.
It's something I've always been really aware of and I work with and against. Like, I wish I knew more about it. I never took any classes on it. I did really love, they have at Crystal Bridges, they moved a Frank Lloyd Wright building, a house there, which was awesome to tour. I should know more than I do, but it ties into the sensitivity thing. Like, the same way, like, one of the first things I do is to take, like, do a 360 scan of the space. And that was another thing, the Momentary has this really high-tech side of them where they sent me a 360 program where I could, like, scroll through the gallery. So at first I was like, I can't even handle this. I don't know how to move it. It went way over my head. But then I got really into it, and you could zoom in and pull out. So even though I couldn't be there, I was able to, like, look at every crack and weird, like, you see the regular floor plans, but they forget to put in that there's an outlet or whatever. So this was a great way to, like, really in-depthly study the space from afar. I do have to deal with the more I get into public art, I have to deal with the architectural plans. And I'm not that technical. My brain sort of short circuits when I have to look at, like, architectural renderings. But if I go into a space, I have a very good sense of dimension and size and physicality. Like, I can just sort of read sizes very quickly.
So you intuit all.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You said sometime at some point that you always want the spaces nobody else wants.
I'm always given the spaces nobody else wants.
Oh, is that like it was?
Yeah, there's a problem that they don't know how to fix. It might have been in the very, very beginning I was drawn to the weird spaces, but now it's definitely a thing that a museum doesn't know what to do with a space, and I come to mind. And, you know, that's fine. It's great. And it's a good challenge because they're always new and weird, and, you know, you never know. I actually have not been in the East Wing or East Building atrium where the National Gallery piece is. Yeah, I haven't gone. I'm going soon to go see it, but that is such a massive space that I think I understood it, but when I'm actually standing in it, I know it's going to be different than what I've processed.
What you're feeling? Well, I read that Vogue magazine article came out. Did that come out right after the first of the year?
I think it was, yeah, March or something with Dodie, yeah.
Which I thought was actually an exceptional piece. I hope you were pleased.
Yeah,
by
she's
it.
Amazing, Dodie Kazan.
I thought it was so well written, and
so
I really, you know, how she suggested the perfect fit for you in this time for the National Museum in this space and for their revised mission was really compelling.
Yeah.
I thought it was an extraordinary opportunity. She what?
She interviewed me for a year. Like, we did so many. It was at least 8 months. We did, and she's amazing. What? Like, we probably did like 8 or 9 conversations. And the second one, I realized, like, Jody, why am I not interviewing you? Like, her life is so fascinating, and she's so smart and quick. I'm honored to be at the National Gallery in a moment when, I mean, period. It's like kind of unbelievable to be at the National Gallery and also to be there when they're redefining and they have a new director with a new mission. You know, I'm thrilled to take over that atrium.
Well, I mean, your work is launching this whole new concept. And
part of it.
I think it's, you should feel very proud is all I can say. I think it's wonderful that you've been given that opportunity. And
yeah, it was great to work with Molly Donovan too, the curator. Like, that was supposed to be all on site. So we were really in a jam when things started shutting. And they pivoted with me, and I made the painting in my studio, and it took up every inch of my wall space was filled, and then I would have to move it out. I have a long fence, and I would move 5 of the 7 panels onto the fence and then rearrange them. But they were great. I mean, it should keep getting moved back and back, but no one could have, you know, I mean, no one expected. They started installing January 5th, and the January 6th bullshit, the Capitol. They're right next to the Capitol. So, I mean, it was a crazy year to have people working on my behalf in D.C.
Well, it just dragged on and on. It must have been, you know, had some sleepless nights over it because they had to keep changing the dates. And
as long as it didn't cancel, I didn't care. Because at a certain point, you realize the further back it gets pushed, the better, because people still... And also most of my supporters, I mean, I have a lot of supporters, but I have a large chunk of people I really love who support my work who are high risk because they're older.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, like, I want my, you know, my favorite collectors, who, these guys actually aren't that much older, but who are in Canada, who can't travel, they come to all my shows. It's been very odd not to have them there.
Mm-hmm.
So getting pushed back, it turned into a good thing as long as it wasn't canceled. And it seems that none of my shows actually got canceled, which is amazing. I kind of can't believe it.
How long is the National Gallery show open?
We don't have an exact closing date because it's tied to construction, but it runs through spring 2022.
Oh, wow, that's fantastic. Yeah. Any chance it would remain permanent?
No, because they have the masters under those boxes. Those big boxes have Max Ernst and Gucci.
Okay.
And, yeah. But I'm hoping that something will remain with them permanently. We're working on it. Hopefully a goal.
Well, it's going to be wonderful when you can get out there and see it in person.
Yeah, I'm going in September. So that would be great.
Good.
Yeah.
I see that you are being represented by a new gallery in New York. Is that so?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, Broadway. I just joined them in the pandemic. They're brand new.
How did that come to be?
Joe Cole and Pascal Spengelman. And Joe and Kristen, his wife, are collectors of mine who are good friends. They're actually, years ago, Veronica at the Blanton did a dinner and introduced us. And it was the first time I met collectors my age, which seems odd, but like, I don't really know. I don't know. It's not the first time, but it's rare to meet collectors my own age who I also really like, who don't say something super offensive in the first 5 minutes. And I remember thinking like, wow, I could be friends with you guys. I like you. So Joe was just over here. I guess he came out for Freeze, and I don't know, we were just talking, and he told me he was going to open a gallery. It was very organic, and I did a really great run with my former gallery, and they're amazing, and it was all peaceful. I just wanted my work to be in a younger context in New York, and I felt like, you know, I have never been in a group museum show in New York City. That is bizarre to me, and I think part of that is because I haven't been with peers. I've been showing with artists a lot older than me and in programs where maybe the younger curators are not watching, or I don't know what it is, but I felt like energetically I needed to do a shift, and my career was at a place where I can handle doing a shift and it would actually be beneficial. So we'll see. I have a September show with them, but I just really like them. And I'm also sort of at a place in my life where I liked my other gallery a lot too, but I just want to work with people that it's easy, and I don't know. It feels my gut says that it's the right thing. So,
well, you have to trust that.
Yeah.
I wasn't familiar with the gallery when I read about it. I went, I don't know this gallery.
Well, it's brand new. It just opened. But you probably would have known Pascal had Taxer and Spengelman years ago, like early 2000s.
Uh-huh.
It was this sweet little building under a bridge in Chelsea. And Yeah, and Joe wasn't in the art world before, but we had worked together on other things.
Well, I think it's great that you've got, you know, continue a presence in New York.
Oh, yeah, yeah, definitely.
What are you planning on showing in the Broadway show? Is it a very large gallery?
No, it's pretty small. I mean, for what I'm used to, it's small. I feel like it's 1,500, maximum 2,000 square feet, but I think it's more like 1,500. I'm going to do a new floor work, and it's sort of like this long, I also have not been in person, but I've watched a lot of videos. It's a long hallway and then a square gallery in the back, or squarish. And I'm going to do a floor piece back there and new paintings. Actually, I did do quite a few new works on paper for them. I thought,
oh, good.
Yeah. I'll introduce you to them. But I thought with the music book, it would be nice to have new ones out there. And I did, I bought this like weird bulk online of vintage music paper, and I got so lucky. I got like probably maybe 200 sheets, so that's really hard to find. Yeah, so I've been making a lot of them, and there's going to be some new dollar talismans.
So I should contact the gallery so I can preview the paperwork.
Yeah, yeah, I can introduce you.
Okay, cool. Would you? Because I would like to preview it before it opens.
Yeah, that'd be great.
I wanted to ask you about in your studio, do you collect stuff and have it in the studio, objects?
I really try to get rid of stuff, but stuff comes to me and people give me things a lot. But I like, I don't, I might, my whole house, my house and studio are in the same lot, and my house came with one 2x2 foot closet. That was it. And I just don't want to have things. So I'm always trying to get rid of them. However, people are always like, I found this, reminds me of you. And I'm like, okay, I have to take it. But then usually the way to get rid of it, I put it in a painting. But I don't know. Like, I will occasionally pick up objects and know that I want to do something with them.
Well, I just wonder when I see the chair or I see the door or whatever the object is, why?
A lot of times, like, the door was already there at Paramount Studios. It was in the fake building. So a lot of times I take objects that are already there and morph them into the composition. Yeah, and then sometimes now they're becoming more functioning. Like, I knew that at the Tang, I think it's really important that people have a place to sit down to look at paintings. So we just ordered some sofas, and I painted them, and I fixed them in a way that people could sit on them. But a lot of the objects, the original objects, came from when I was working in abandoned buildings, making fast work on site. I would, like, find a blouse there, and I'm like, okay, well, let's make a piece out of this blouse. And it sort of evolved from there.
So it's just happenstance that you come upon these objects, and they kind of speak to you, and you find a way to, you find a motivation to incorporate them.
Yeah, it's identifying the ones that do speak to me or are already, have a connection to the space that I'm going to be working in, and it's sort of a bridge between me and the space.
I see. So let's go to the Tang. Now, that was your most recent exhibition, and that opened, what, a few weeks ago? A month ago?
Yeah, no, like a week ago. Maybe.
Oh, that recent.
Yeah.
And so what was different about the Tang for you?
Well, it's my first survey show. So it's 16 paintings that span a decade. So they were borrowed in from collections, some of them I own. And then I made a 3,000 square foot floor painting on site, directly on the floor, which is the first time in 20 years I've worked directly on the floor. It's kind of a crazy move, but they let me do it. And then I have three sofas. And, yeah, it was amazing to see. It felt like a family reunion of the paintings. It felt like I grew up around the Tang. I left when I was 15. But it was like some sort of deep psychological homecoming. And I don't know, like, you know, like, you did it. You left and you came back, and but the work together just looks amazing. And they're paintings that
were shown, you know, in different places and hadn't ever been all in the same room together.
What was the span of years between the paintings?
About 10. I think it's like 2011 or 12 until 2020, 2021.
Mm-hmm.
It basically starts with the Honor Fraser years and moves.
I see.
Yeah.
And what do you come away with having had that experience, having seen those paintings reunited and revisit them? What is there anything specific that struck you?
It's just really strong, and there's no, I don't operate with much doubt. Like, I feel like I'm supposed to be doing what I'm doing, but it felt like, all right, this is pretty clear.
Pretty damn good, huh?
Yeah. And I hope that I have, you know, 40 more years of painting in me, but if not, I have achieved something with that and the National Gallery at the same time. I've personally achieved something I've always wanted, you know, since I was a teenager, and I, you know, it's here. And it feels like the start of the next adult chapter in the work. Yeah, it just feels really good, and I'm thankful. And Ian also, he's very interesting. Our childhood crossed over a lot, but we didn't know that until we started working together. But he's one of those curators that started off as an artist, so he understands painting. He's very emotional. Like, he understands things in a way that curators don't always get. He just has a side of him that's more of an artist than you usually get. And that, you know, there's pros and cons to that, but the pros is it's really fun to work with, and you feel like you're working with someone who really understands the meaning of the work. And that, honestly, is quite rare, even with dealers. A lot of people can be around the work and move the work but not actually understand it, and
mm-hmm.
Ian does. So that was great to have as the first.
It's a real privilege, isn't it, to work with someone like that?
Yeah.
And it's so affirming. I mean, it sounds like that whole Tang show was so affirming for you. You just need to continue doing what you're doing.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, just continue, which is totally intuitive. I mean, you still don't do mock-ups, or you really do function from an intuitive space.
Yeah, definitely. I'm starting to have to do mock-ups because I'm branching into more public art, and it is so painful. I just don't know why people don't trust that I know what I'm doing, but, you know, I'm trying to learn some skills. I'm so bad at showing up my face when someone's talking to me, just saying something very dumb to me. It comes right out. I'm trying to work on that.
I know how that feels. I don't do cold call studio visits. I can't, because I can't fake my feelings.
Yeah,
I can't fake an engagement, you know. So
yeah.
I have to know that I'm interested in the work before I go into a studio.
It's smart.
I mean,
that
happened to me
too.
Once early on, and I just never want to be in that position again.
Yeah, I thought as an artist, I've had people come in and be like, "Well, you're a good artist, but I hate this type of art." Like, I was like, "Great, okay."
Well, nice to have you here.
Yeah, it lasted like 2 minutes. That was it.
I read a piece in, what the heck, Deviation Magazine? Written by Ash Holden. And I wanted to explore with you this idea of living in two worlds. You have your family world, and then you have your own world. And that really interested me. Can you talk to me about that?
Sure. I mean, I probably live more than two worlds. But it was interesting, too, with the Tang, because my parents came and saw the work, and my parents are so proud, but they do not understand, you know, they don't have any background in art. But it was it sounds so ridiculous, and my mother would fight me on this, but I swear it's the first time she said how much she liked it. Like, she was gushing in a way that she never has before. And they like travel to see my work, but then they don't comment on it. And it's not that they don't, they just don't know how to. They don't know, you know, they've never...
They don't have the language, maybe.
Yeah, they don't have the language, and mm-hmm. the art world's probably extremely intimidating because of the mm-hmm. class differences and other things. But I think there's a huge class thing going on.
Yeah, I can't totally remember. I know Ash grew up very religious, and that was it's interesting. That was a conversation with someone I didn't know who just wrote me and asked if he could fly out and interview me for his own publication he was making. But we're totally friends. I really liked him, and I thought he was super interesting. He's a seeker, and he's out there. And it was more honest than I had talked to anybody. Like, he got a lot out of me that I wouldn't tell, like, you know, a New York Times person. So I think the different realities between the art world is your chosen reality or family if you really commit to it. And I feel like I have my chosen family that are all the people that mostly they're from undergrad and coming of age in San Francisco. And they're all connected to art or understand art. And then I have my other family, my biological family, who I love, but we're so different. And I mean, there's really not that much to say besides, like, I love them, but, you know, I've just never really fit in. But also I left when I was 15, so I knew that, and they were not abusive. They were great, supportive parents, but I just was like, my life ends if I stay in this city little town. So I don't know. I've always sort of balanced it or had multiple homes going on.
When did you, at what age did you reconcile that was the way it had to be?
At 15 when I left.
Okay. So that early, yeah. You kind of knew.
Mm-hmm.
And you haven't taken on the struggle of trying to bring them together. It is the way it is.
No. No, there's no point. I mean, there really is no point. I love them both. They're just separate things.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think of it like if someone was a surgeon, they would have the people at the hospital that they can talk to in their, like, compartmentalized, specific brains. They're not going to, like, talk to their granddaughter in that language, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, no one in my family is, I mean, my brother actually makes furniture, and it's interesting, he's gotten more artsy, or he's gotten more creative, but he is, like, a full-on capitalist, and we are so different. But as we've aged, we've found ways to communicate on different things. Like I'll ask him financial advice, and maybe I'll say you should wear your safety goggles when you're pouring resin, and we have some crossover. But I don't know. I don't get too hung up on it. It doesn't. I have my core friends that if there was an emergency, that's who should be called, and I'm fine with that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, the article. I mean, I came away with the sense that you knew each other because of the intimacy. I mean, Ash seems so honed in on your realities and how they paralleled his, so it was fascinating.
I know he's one of the few people I've kept in touch with in the pandemic, and I wrote him letters for grad school, and he got in, but then they wouldn't let him defer, so I felt sort of invested in knowing what happened to him. But, yeah, we've become friends. It's funny how you meet people like that.
Yeah, and how you even led him in to begin with.
I know. I usually
what prompted
I don't.
That decision?
I Googled him and found these ridiculous videos he had made that were just so stupid, but also kind of amazing. It was just a detail that, like, I found. I was like, okay, this guy, he has, like, a core of him that's an artist that's seeking. And but I'm very strict with my privacy, so... Especially with men, like if women artists reach out, I'm more open and will, you know, have a conversation. But with like a random guy, I'm like not gonna, you know, let him fly to a city and talk to me usually.
Well,
it
sounds like you were just as curious as he was.
Well, I mean, I was like, so yeah. I mean, I don't know. I was. He also, I think he. I don't know. I wasn't. I don't know. That sounds. I was not interested in Ash, but I just knew that he was I could read what type of person he was.
Mm-hmm.
God, we got to cut this out. I don't want that going in too much. I was in a serious relationship when I met Ash, and he was a fan of my ex's, and I could tell that too. But
well, you're in a different relationship now, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And a good
much
one.
Better. Oh, yeah, he's great.
Great, great. Yeah. Well, I'm happy about that. You know, we've been talking for an hour. I could keep talking, but I think I need to let you get on with your day.
Yeah.
This has been wonderful. What's next? What are you working on now? What's ahead?
Well, I have to ship the Broadway show August 19th, so I'm finishing that.
Yeah,
and then I have two other things in January and March that aren't public yet, and I have a couple other big things that aren't public. So I have a lot of things I'm not allowed to talk about, but I'm probably busy all next year.
Cool. Well, I look forward
to
that. By the way, I did see, you mentioned a monograph or something that the Tang is producing.
Yeah, that's the one.
Does that have a yellow cover? Something yellow on the cover? Have you seen it?
No, it's going to be with Delmonico, but I don't know if that's...
Because I saw something online when I was doing some research, and I don't think I have this catalog or this book in my library. And it seemed like it was new, but I couldn't find a date on it.
Oh, maybe it was the Land one that has some yellow spray painting.
That was probably it then.
Oh, I'll send it to you. Yeah, that's
great.
It's my favorite book, but it's from 2012. It's 2002 to 2012. And they
I don't know why I haven't seen
that,
but I came across it and I thought it was fairly recent, but I couldn't find a date on it. So
I'll send
you
a photo.
If you get a copy of that. Okay, great.
Yeah, I can send it to you. It went out of print, and then they found a bunch when they moved. So I have a bunch right now.
Oh, good. I would love that when you get a moment. And
okay.
I have a FedEx number, too. I could get Liz to send me a FedEx number. So you can
use
that.
Don't worry.
You're very generous and kind always, and it's such a pleasure.
Thanks,
your joy, your work brings me great joy, and I'm so happy to have this opportunity to speak with you again. And I'll continue to watch and follow with great interest and keep
Thank
up
you.
The good work, Sarah. You're on
Thank
a roll.
Thank you. Thank
I think
you
what you've achieved this year is phenomenal, and I'm impressed in spite of everything.
Thanks so much.
Okay, you
Thanks
be
so
well. Thanks again.
Yeah, good luck with
Bye.
The baby coming.
Thank you.
Bye.
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 Bye.